Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Momentarily, this season I keep talking about just how much fun it is, Andy, because it has been. To sit back and watch these games has just been an absolute blast. We go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. She's back after a little well-deserved break. She's Mandy Bell from MLB.com, where she covers the Guardians. Hi, Mandy.
Hey, Mandy.
Hey, guys. How are you?
How was vacation? I saw some pictures there on Instagram. Looked like you had a great vacation.
Yeah, it was awesome. We went up to Banff in Canada, and it was truly unbelievable. The views, it just doesn't even look like it's real when you're there, so I'm sure the pictures don't look real whenever you've seen some of those, but yeah, it was great.
That's outstanding. And you came back just as the team started to get going again. Thank you for doing that.
It might have been because you left.
Yep, they lost 9 out of 12, and you know, you weren't around for most of it, so nice.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
We talked earlier in the show. A bunch of things are back. The lead in the division, Lane Thomas's swing, Kyle Manzardo, starting pitching. Let's start with the starting pitching. The last three games, not only do you get effective pitching, but you get pitching that goes into the sixth or seventh inning. How key is that for this team to develop at this point down the stretch, Mandy, when we've heard about a bullpen that's been used heavily this year?
Yeah, all those things are super important to be back, but the starting pitching is just number one on the list, obviously, because not only has the bullpen been overworked this year, but it's just you can't go into the playoffs without starting pitching. You can't rely on the bullpen. You have to have some key starters, even if there's only two or three of them. You need to make sure you have those guys. And outside of Tanner Bibee, they didn't have anyone this year. And so if Gavin Williams is starting to settle in right now, if Matthew Boyd and Alex Cobb, the two guys that you took some chances on and hoped that, yeah, they didn't pitch all year this year and they're coming off of some pretty serious injuries, but we're just going to hope that they could pan out and be what we need them to be. If all of this kind of works out, it's going to be, one, really impressive and I think a little bit of luck involved there, but two, it's so needed because you get into the playoffs, if they hold on to the bye, they have a 5-game series. But if they don't, they have a 3-game series. You need to have stellar pitching or at least above average pitching, which they haven't had this year, to try to get through that. So for them to come alive right now, this could be like the most perfect timing that they could have asked for.
Mandy, what do you, just Stephen Vogt, I mean, like, he had so much success early on. He had to think, oh, man, I know there's no way he was thinking it's going to be this easy. And he's had some lean times right now. But your thoughts on him as being a rookie manager in a stretch run here that is super important?
I think you'll learn a lot about him during this stretch. I think we started to learn a little bit more about him whenever they struggled a little bit over this past month. And so, I mean, honestly, since the end of May, for the most part, they've been around a team. And so to try to keep getting the best out of this team that's obviously outperformed anything that anyone expected them to this year, he's done a really good job. And he's figured out how to mix and match as much as he needs to. He hasn't been afraid to use his bench. He hasn't been afraid to try to ride the hot hand. He's been able to be aggressive for the most part. He's really, really turned to that bullpen and relied on them and figured out a way to do that without overmaxing one guy or two guys to this point. He's balanced out everything as well as he could have so far. So it's been pretty impressive as a rookie manager. I know Carl Willis has helped tremendously, and Vogt would be the first person to tell you that, of how much they've leaned on Carl this year. So to have that veteran presence of a guy who's not only been around the league so long, but around this team so long now too, that's been really important for him. But it seems like he's really outdone himself of what he could have done in his rookie season so far. And I think we'll learn even more about him going down this final couple weeks here to try to clinch that playoff spot.
Mandy, big differences between Steven and Terry Francona in the way they manage a team. Does something major jump out to you or no?
Well, I mean, if you're just thinking of like recency bias here, of like what I remember everyone on social media mentioning to me of Tito just not maybe being as aggressive in the coming off of the bench. Last year, I remember every possible post of every fan about not pinch hitting for Miles Straw in situations, or just sticking with the same guys and not mixing up the lineup very often. I think just for recency purposes, that's what I remember most of his final season. And Vogt hasn't done that. I mean, Vogt had Tyler Freeman every day in center field at the start of the year, and that's not something we saw Tito try to do, a mix up and try to find a different position for some of these guys that you knew coming up would be middle infielders. And if it didn't work, then that was just sort of it. I know we saw Ahmed Rosario out there for a little, but we didn't really see too much mixing and matching going on to try to get some of these younger bats in. And I think it just seems like Vogt has tried to get as creative as possible to try to see, okay, well, if we have this guy here, well, he doesn't really fit in the picture here, so let's try this or let's try that, and coming up with different ways to try to see whose bat would be hottest at what time. And it's gotten them a lot of success this year.
Let's talk about Lane Thomas for a second. The last, four games, he's been pretty good. You know, I think he's like 6-for-12 in the last four games. So on there, is it just a matter of dropping him in the order, or was there adjustments made, or what's the theory behind Lane Thomas being able to contribute? Because I'm sure it was weighing on him.
When you talk to Vogt about it, he'll just say, he continues to say, he just got off to a slow start, and that happens. And we knew he was a good hitter, and we knew he would get there. I'm sure there's a lot going on behind the scenes of fixing little things. But when you talk to Vogt or talk to most of these guys, they just say you just need to ride it out, and you just need to allow it to happen and stop trying to do so much. And it sounds so cliche, but for his case, it probably does make a difference a little bit of just trying to settle in, because he's coming in not only to a new team, but a team that was expecting him to be this big difference maker, since that was really the only acquisition they got offensively, and they were trying to help this lineup. And there's a lot of adjustment period to just learn new guys, but there's pressure that comes along with it, and you're trying to help them at a time where they started to struggle a little bit more. And you weren't being the guy, you're immediately penciled into that number two spot in the order. So I'm sure that there was just a lot of him trying to do too much. And after time, you can just settle in a little bit more and eventually it'll turn. And I think he's gotten to that point where he finally can breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief now.
Mandy, I'm a little surprised that they didn't look to the AAA team for some offensive help when things weren't going very well. When the rosters expand, they bring up Kyle Manzardo. He hits two home runs in his first game, his first two major league home runs. That's terrific. How do they use him moving forward? Do you think he's an everyday DH against righties? If a righty's there and David Fry against lefties, are they going to platoon that? Or how do you think Kyle's going to be used?
Probably just because they're the same player right now. David Fry can't play in the outfield, or he can't catch right now. Or maybe he can, but they haven't said that he can't, but they're not playing him there because of his elbow giving him trouble all year. So it just seems like if you have Manzardo and Fry being backup first baseman and DHs, it just seems the most plausible that they're just going to be platooning them, since they're on either side of the plate when they're batting. So I would guess that that's the case. They've been very clear that they have no intention of having Manzardo play first base. So it's going to just be down to platooning Fry and Manzardo, and maybe if he just stays ridiculously hot and just keeps hitting and hitting, then maybe he'll get a couple more ABs than David Fry and a couple of matchups. But no, I would expect that it would just be a platoon situation now for DH.
What was the word with Cobb after yesterday? That no pain, everything was fine. The way he was pitching were 2 days ago. He looked absolutely fine, and just we were talking about the possibility of a perfect game no hitter there, and then the pitch count, and the fact that he went up to vote and said, hey, look, we got to do what's best for the team. I want to make sure I've got that story 100% correct. So can you walk me through that, and then just obviously he must be feeling good health wise.
Yeah, obviously he's perfect through five at that point, and his pitch count was already starting to get up there a little bit more. They had him on a little bit of a stricter pitch count than they normally would, just because this was his first start in 18 days coming off of that fingernail splitting open. So he knew the situation, and he said, look, I understand that there's like a superstition that you can't have any pitchers warming in the bullpen whenever you have a starter on the mound with a no-hitter going. I didn't want to have Vogt overthink that. He's like, I knew he would do the right thing anyway, but I just wanted to offer that reassurance of going up to him in the fifth and saying, I understand the situation. I know you're going to have to do what you need to do. So just go ahead and do it and make sure that the guys in the bullpen are prepared to come in whenever they need to come in. So, I think we all knew that he wasn't going to be making it nine innings, but for him to just give Vogt, especially in his rookie season, of like, uh-oh, there's this perfect game going. What am I going to have to do? This is going to be brutal of a conversation to have with him. Just to give him that extra reassurance before he even got to that point, it just shows what a 36-year-old veteran brings to this team. We're so used to so many young guys. I think it just sort of alleviated any of that extra pressure that Vogt would have had. But he gave it up in the sixth anyway, first batter. And whenever he came in afterwards, he said he felt great. And I cannot believe his nail grew back as fast as it did. It's really impressive, because it was, from what I heard, I didn't see the pictures. I wasn't there whenever he first had this injury, but from Zach Meisel, Paul Hoynes, they were telling me that they saw the pictures of it right away, and they said it was really gruesome. So he was showing us afterwards, and it's completely back somehow, and that's really awesome that it was able to heal up that quickly for the Guardians, because they obviously needed that type of performance, and that started to create this little domino effect now of getting some really quality pitching at the right time.
Mandy Bell joining us, covers the Guardians for MLB.com. Cobb comes in, obviously had the injury situation, but Mandy, he showed the other day on Sunday what he might be able to bring to this team the rest of the way. Matthew Boyd comes in and has been really good in every start that he's had. How unlikely of a combination that you bring in two pitchers who hadn't thrown a pitch in a major league game this year, and fingers crossed, it appears to be working.
Yeah, I really didn't think. I thought maybe they would get lucky with one of them coming back strong, but so far to have both of them look as great as they have, they've really, like, it's like winning the lottery here that they were able to pull that off with two guys. And not only is it just that they're pitching so well, but they're veterans, and this team really does need that, and it seems like we talk about it a lot, and it's just not really understood how important that is, especially whenever they're going into the playoffs and they're going down into important stretches like this. It's really crucial to have that veteran experience to try to lean on. When you have such young guys in the rotation, in the bullpen, it can really help feed off of that, and I know the Guardians were hoping that they would serve as those presence whenever they were brought over here. So to have a mixture of that leadership plus the outstanding pitching they've gotten from them, it's really put them in a good spot.
And this is kind of a non-baseball question, but I think it's been really interesting to watch them get 30,000 plus every weekend now.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about how it affects the fans. How it affects the players. I don't even know if that's a true question, but I do think it's been impressive the way that fans have come out all season long, especially on the weekends, where you can, you promise these guys, hey, you got a chance to play in front of 100,000 every weekend and how important that is for the franchise?
You ask, we've asked these guys multiple times this year, all throughout at different points of the season, how important it is to be playing in front of such big crowds, and they all say the same thing. They truly seem to mean it. It doesn't seem like it's just canned answers when they know that they're supposed to say it. They all say it is so important. It fires us up. We hear it. It makes us so excited. And I think it's reflected in their home record. It's been excellent all season. I know they didn't do great against the Royals at home last week, but still, their record is truly, I think it's reflective of that. Yeah, it could just be a coincidence that their attendance is great this year and then their home record is one of the best in baseball this year. But still, it does seem like it's been affecting each other, and they all seem like they really, really do enjoy whenever the crowds are packed. So it's been fun to see that because, I don't know, we've had such a weird few years. You had that COVID season whenever it was all empty, then you had like restricted seats, and then last year they didn't play that great. So just to have it be where it's packed all the time, it's been fun even for us to sit there and listen to the crowds get as into it as they are.
Mandy, what's how is Stephen Kwan handling a second half of the season that I don't think any of us saw coming?
It seems like when we talk to him, it seems like he's as level-headed as it gets, and that's just his personality. But you know it has to be like eating him up a little bit behind the scenes, nothing that he would actually show. But yeah, as a competitor, you're going to want to try to fix whatever's going wrong as quickly as possible. And he started the year as hot as possible. I mean, mid-June, you're still looking up at the board, and you're like, oh, my gosh, is he going to get to 400? And now that he's sub 300, it's fallen off pretty rapidly, and that's tough for this lineup that uses him as a spark plug at the top of the order. But, I mean, if there's any person that could handle it mentally as well as he's doing, it's truly Kwan. And so the fact that he's able to try to block it out and keep grinding through to try to find an answer here in the final weeks, it's going to be difficult because this is obviously weighing on him. But when you talk to him about it, he truly does seem really level-headed and just trying to figure out the answer and stick to his plans and just let it come to him and try not to chase it too much.
The way Lane Thomas is hitting it, I know Andy just asked you about Lane. Does an outfield of Kwan, Thomas, and Noel make sense on a most everyday basis the rest of the way?
I would think so. I mean, I don't know how you don't have Noel out there every day at this point, just because the threat of that bat, even if he isn't hitting the homer, the threat of it in the back of pitchers' minds, I mean, that's a scary bat to face. And at any point, we've now seen it multiple times, he can change the game with one enormous swing. And you have him out there, if you have Lane Thomas settling in, and even when Kwan is scuffling the way he has been, he still always puts up quality at-bats, and he's still working the counts. He's still doing the job of a leadoff hitter. So you have all those three guys. It seems like that's the best combo that you can have right now.
Welcome back. Glad they're in first place for you, and we're going to give you credit.
Okay, I'll take it. I'll
you
take all
it.
The credit.
Mandy, appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mandy.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Mandy Bell, MLB.com, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I want to go over that outfield when we come back. It's Baskin and Phelps here.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
On the Fan, Hody with a 2020. I asked Mandy, so here you go. Stephen Kwan, though he's struggling right now, Lane Thomas is hitting. Junkenzie Noel has been a pleasant addition and a force when he's in there. And I said, so is an outfield of Kwan, Thomas, and Noel what we're looking at for the most part moving forward? And she said, yeah. She thought, yes. That this is what you should do. Would you do that, Andy?
Yes, I personally would. I don't even have to think twice about that. Like, I love watching Noel go up to the plate. I love having thought that when someone steps into the box, there's a chance that ball is going to leave the ballpark from an outfield. Like, it's hard for me to fathom that we haven't had that threat for a while. And to make sure that you've got a guy that can step up to the plate.
In the outfield, we haven't.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking
about.
Jose and Josh,
we obviously have.
Yeah, but I always feel like one of your outfielders should be able to hit it out of the ballpark.
Isn't that the truth?
And put fear in the other team that, step up to, oh, man, you don't want to face this guy. Yeah, and so I finally feel like we have somebody who's within that range.
I think that's the case, too. You obviously have to stick with Stephen Kwan. You know, he's not going anywhere, so he's your left fielder. And I'm going to play Junkenzie Noel more often than not in right field. I don't care if it's a lefty, if it's a righty, for the very reasons you said, Andy. He's an additional bat in the lineup who can scare an opposing team. And along with Jose Ramirez and Josh Naylor, that gives you three, because I don't think there are any others. That said, I think you got to ride the Lane Thomas hot streak as long as it's going. And hopefully it goes a while. And hitting .385 over his last 10 games, and his batting average when it bottomed out at .111 as a Guardian on August 23rd is now up significantly. I think you got to just go with him. That's what you brought him here for. You brought him here to play every day, or most every day. I'll give you that. And even though his splits against lefties are much better, you brought him here to play every day. You don't give up three prospects to go bring in a guy who's not going to play every day. By the way, Jose Tena is playing very well for Washington right now. He's up and playing well. And
I want you to get in your Honda, and I want you to rip your rearview mirror out. Players that are no longer here, you're not allowed to see them anymore.
You need to delete your exes off your Facebook page.
Yeah, you do.
Get them off your Facebook page. You don't need to see that. Don't follow him on Twitter. Don't hit him on Instagram.
Just
get rid of him.
He's playing very well.
I know, but you get.
No, you do.
You get regret.
Get your exes off the Instagram page.
I'm playing Lane Thomas every day because I'm happy with what he's doing. He looks like he's found it at the plate. I'm going to play him every day.
For the last 3 days.
So.
4 days. We're just doing a little intervention here.
10 days.
Stop looking at the Deshaun Kaisers of the world.
I'm not. I'm talking about Lane Thomas. He's here. He's now. I'm playing him every day. He's hitting .385 over his last 10. How do you not play him every day?
You don't. You play him every day. Easy.
Okay. So what do you do with Will Brennan?
You put him back in.
Is he your fourth outfielder?
Yeah, he's fourth outfielder. He's our utility guy.
And might play a little bit if you decide Thomas needs a day off, if he's facing
a real tough righty. Maybe Thomas gets into a little bit of a slump, and then you go back to him. That. I'm just saying, like, it's baseball. It's going to happen. Guys are going to go in a stretch where they're going to go 0 for 15, 0 for 20, and maybe they need a day off, or maybe they need a day off, and then Wally Pipp, Oh, well.
So harsh.
It's baseball.
You're so harsh.
It's baseball.
Andy Baskin. I just think that now, and even with Kwan struggling as he has, with Noel finding it, with Thomas finding it, I don't think you have an outfield that's lacking for offense. Now, that's fingers are crossed, you know, that those guys keep going.
How long do you feel confident about saying they found it?
I don't know. I'm going to.
How long did it take for you to believe? 40 games? Three, four games?
It's been 10 for Lane Thomas.
All right.
I mean, he's hitting .385 over the last 10. That's pretty good, Andy. That's a nice stretch.
Can he match it for the next 10?
Yeah.
Is it fair to ask any major league hitter to match it for the next 10?
Yeah, I would think he can. I mean, it's not like he's hitting, you know, .700 over the last 10 games. Don't you think?
Yeah, no, I get it. The way this season has been kind of piecemeal together through injury and, you know, guys that are scuffling to try to make a move, nothing would surprise me. I do like the thought that those three guys are going to stay in the outfield if they can. And if they're going to make things happen, I'm down with it.
Isn't it? It's interesting to me. If Lane Thomas ends up in center field all the time, Noel ends up in right field all the time, those are two guys you...
Remember how many people were scared of us, too, when we were saying, well, just put him in center field. It looks like he'd be perfect there.
Well, I don't think we're going to... If Lane Thomas keeps hitting, we're not going to see a whole lot of Tyler Freeman. And Daniel Schneeman, maybe, because he hits from the other side of the plate. But you've got Thomas and Noel, Cobb and Boyd. Those are four guys who have been pretty key here, who... The only one even on your radar at the beginning of the season was Noel because he was in the system. And here you're going to have four really key guys for this team going down the stretch who have been brought in or brought up, and I think that's outstanding. I do think if you take two from Kansas City here in the next 2 days, you can bury them.
If you take two, yeah. Right now, if you win tonight, then you have totally equaled out what happened last week here. You equal it out, then tomorrow you get a chance to win that the bigger picture of a best of seven. It's really what it becomes.
Yeah, and I would think you have the case to do that. Watch out for Minnesota, though. I still think Minnesota's got a pretty good team. But I do think we're in a situation here, and guys are finding it at the right time. And, man, Lane Thomas needed to, Andy. Because otherwise, I think you're looking.
Thought he was pressing. That's all.
Well, probably, but you're looking at a decision. If you're Stephen Vogt, man, we just gave up. You know, this was our big acquisition at the trade deadline, and I got to put him on the bench because that's where it was going. You were going to have to put him on the bench, and then you were going to have to play guys that you tried to replace by bringing him in. You know, which really defeats the purpose of making a trade, doesn't it?
Yeah. So you think the season comes down to what the 16th to the 19th when you have Minnesota for four here. Look at what they have ahead of them, which is what I feel like we've been doing for the last month. So you got Kansas City for two more. You got LA for three. The White Sox for three. Please play well against them.
You know, the problem is...
At home against Tampa for four. Hopefully we get Brian Anderson in the studio. We talked to him on Friday.
It'd be nice.
Yeah.
We can't just... You can't just look at that Minnesota series and say it's going to come down to that because if you don't do a good job leading up to it, it doesn't matter, right?
You need to just really play 500 ball getting there.
Well, I don't know, Andy. I think now's the time you put it together and you really maybe try and pull away.
Win the series, sweep Chicago going into it. If they win one more in Kansas City, you win the series. Can you take two out of three from the Dodgers in L.A.? I think that's a tough task.
We'll see.
For some reason we don't perform.
Tonight in Kansas City. And again, Tanner Bibee going against Brady Singer. Andy was paying particular attention to the Ohio State blowout of the Akron Zips the other day. Zips had a great first half. And news from the NCAA that you might find a little surprising coming up on Baskin and Phelps. Possibly hold on here and make this thing respectable. And the answer was no. Ohio State rolled them.
Well, the spread was like, what, 49? 49 and a half?
Really?
Yeah, and so if Akron doesn't hit those two field goals, right, that changes things.
Wow.
I walk away from those games going, man, Vegas knows they're just so smart. They just get it right all the time. How about the fact that the Big Ten, with now 18 teams, was 17-1? Minnesota was the only team that lost. 17-1.
I don't know the schedule. I can't imagine that there were a whole lot of overly large challenges there.
Still, I think it's an impressive start. There were a lot of things.
They weren't playing Appalachian State.
No, well, that's true. But I don't know. There were a lot of things that hit me about the game. First of all, and we talked about this with Tim May on Friday, Archie Griffin finally gets a statue, not only at the Rose Bowl, but at Ohio Stadium too. And I just thought, and then he got to dot the I. Like, I thought that, that was
cool.
I thought that was fantastic. I also thought that Tim's theory on having statues all the way from St. John Arena all the way over to Ohio Stadium, so that you would have all the Heisman Trophy winners. I think you would probably want to have significant players of defense, like a Chris Spielman statue probably would be cool too. Because you just can't. It's one thing to do the offense, or it'd be cool. Maybe you have the offense on one side of the street and defense on the other side, or you have coaches on there. I just think it adds to the great history that you get with Ohio State football. So I thought that was another fantastic moment. Plus, we had all of the changes in college football that you saw were implemented this weekend. Helmets with radio communication, which I thought was interesting when CBS did their cutaway to the sideline reporter, and she played what it sounds like in there. Did you catch any of that? I don't know if you missed that or not.
I did not watch a single snap of the Buckeye game.
I'm telling you, it sounds worse than – thanks.
You're fine.
It sounds worse than AM radio. I don't know how – and when you get into these stadiums with over 100,000, and the top three stadiums in the country are all Big Ten stadiums, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State. As far as capacity, I don't know. I mean, it's got to be hard to hear. And then they also have hand signals for that. So I thought that was it was interesting to hear that because I've never heard that before. That was interesting. The two-minute timeout is interesting. The fact that after the game, Ryan Day said, I can't really use my excuse of I got to wait to see the game film now, because he can now watch it live on one of the 18 tablets they're allowed to have on the sidelines.
It was cool watching all throughout this weekend. I'll say one thing. Drew Aller was flinging it for Penn State, too. That was fun until the weather delay kicked in. That was the only bummer of that one.
Pride of Medina.
Yeah, he was flinging it. And Iowa might actually have an offense. I don't know if I can make fun of Iowa as much as I used to.
NCAA thinking about making a move, Andy, that could be big.
Yeah, I thought this was I'm trying to remember who had Ross Dellinger had the story first. That the NCAA is is considering changes to amateurism rules, which would permit athletes in all sports, not just football, to play a fifth year and preserve their red shirt. So 5 years to play, or 6 years to play five, and that's without medical red shirts, to earn prize money before college, and to eliminate NLI.
National Letters of Intent.
Right.
It's interesting. So you could actually be in your sixth year of eligibility.
Yeah.
If you had a red shirt, and I believe the figure, and it's not just for football. They would do this for other sports like baseball, soccer.
All sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're still debating it, apparently.
I don't know what's the debate. Just do it.
Well, it's this. You can get the fifth year of eligibility in football if you play in less than 30% of the games, basically, is what it is.
In this scenario, is that what you're
no,
in Ross's?
Right now. And then they would take that to the other sports, is what the deal is, from everything I can gather. So, in other words, if you were a soccer player and you played your freshman and sophomore years, and then you tweaked your hamstring in your junior year after, what, 8 games?
Yeah, but if you tweak your hamstring, you can get a medical red shirt.
Well, you have your red shirt available to you, but you would be able to redshirt that year regardless.
So you'd be able to, I mean, if you play less than 30%.
And then come back and play 2 more years. So you could play full year, like 8 games, whatever the number would be,
right,
and then play 2 more full years rather than wasting that year.
I'll tell you, I like it. I also like it for football because I think
it's in place for football.
5 to play 6? Not right now, it isn't. It's 4 to play. It's
You can play a certain number of games and use it as a redshirt.
Five to play four. Yeah, that's your true redshirt year. And you can redshirt at any point. You don't have to redshirt as a freshman.
No.
So, but right now, though, it's five to play four. And to me, if you read this right, this is six to play five. So you'll get a fifth year of being able to play. Yeah.
It's a little vague right now, but according to Dellinger, the rules are in place right now for football. And they would add it to the other sports.
Oh, no. Maybe I misread this then, because I thought originally that they were going to say you can play college sports for 5 years, that you can play for five seasons, and then you pick up a sixth if you redshirt. Did I just misread this? I thought it was the way it played out like that, so that you would get to play a fifth year to preserve the redshirt.
More eligibility for college kids. Is that a good thing?
Yeah, because how many true students graduate in 4 years flat? Not a lot. I would like to see the number.
I would think most. Did you?
No, it took me an extra summer. So I needed the summer semester.
No, not even close.
Yeah, I think I think the majority, let me look up the number, but I think the majority of college students need more than 4 years, which might mean, you know, if you want to go in 4 years flat, then maybe you're taking a summer. Did you take any summer classes?
No.
You didn't take any summer classes? Good for you, man. So you would have to take a summer class within there to try to maybe make up a couple extra hours to get past it. I think that's fair. I think if the general college population, if it takes them 5 years to complete their degree, then why shouldn't athletics reflect that too? I don't think there's any problem with that. But the bigger reason, though,
I don't know that it's a problem either. It's just with health issues and injuries, and you're asking a lot out of these kids, and that eligibility time can fly by in a heartbeat.
Sure.
And if you get dinged up and you have a problem, you might fight through it because you know, hey, I'm into this season. I can't redshirt now. You can in football and wrestling. Apparently, what they're talking about is in place right now in football and wrestling. But they would put it in all the other sports. Dellinger says in football, a player can play in up to four regular season games and still call that a redshirt season.
Yeah, it used to be the first three games of the year. I know that's what the rule was at one point. And then if you played after that, you'd burn your eligibility.
Yeah.
But you could still do it the other way. I still think if you give athletes 5 years to play, I think that it's better, especially with NIL. So now you've got those mid-tier players that might want to be, that don't want to be sixth-round picks or seventh-round picks in the NFL. I'm just talking football. That maybe get another chance to come back and make some money in college rather than be drafted.
I don't know. To me, college isn't something you spend 7 years in. Jim's in Strongsville. Jim.
Yep, disagree with you, Andy. Listen, I don't need some 25, 26-year-old dude playing.
How long did it take you to graduate, Jim? How long did it take you to graduate? Did you graduate in 4 years flat?
It's not about graduating, dude. You're taking up a scholarship that could go to a younger guy. Look, you have 4 years. Use your 4 years. A lot of these guys that are hanging out.
Who cares about scholarships anymore? These guys are getting NIL.
Not all.
Then they're going to get rid of the scholarship rules, too. I read that a couple weeks ago, too.
Andy, these guys that stick around for 6 years, they're not sticking around to change their draft status. They're not getting drafted. They're staying in there to hang out of their glory days. Guess what? College is for kids that are 18 to 22. Once you get past that, get out of their way.
You make it sound like we're talking about traditional. Everything you know about traditional college is out the window. Miami had a guy that's in his ninth season score a touchdown. This weekend.
I know, and I don't like it. I don't want it. That's not what college. I get that it's changing, but the ages of the kids shouldn't be changing.
So does it bother you when a 24-year-old comes up from AAA and makes it to the bigs for the first time? Does that bother you?
That's pros.
Well, guess what? These guys are pros now. They're getting paid.
Why don't we give
Quinn Ewers took two snaps at Ohio State and got $1 million, Jim? $1 million.
Why don't we let 20-year-olds play high school football? Why not? It took them longer to graduate. Why have any rules?
19? Well, that's a possibility, too. They've gotten rid of most of these rules already. It's either, what's the line? I can't remember. Adapt or die. That's where we are right now.
Look, I disagree. I don't think this is as big a thing as you think it is. These aren't like the best of the best players. These are guys literally just hanging on. Jim, and they're just hanging out, taking a spot from another kid.
Jim, I could see 5 years, but I can't.
But hold on, I'm
with you. I can't see more than that, man.
I don't have a problem with five years either.
If you can't get through college in 5 years, we'll move along, and it's time for somebody else to get the opportunity to play.
Agreed.
All right, Jim.
Love you, Jeff.
Seriously,
you.
I mean, how long should you be able to, if you haven't gone to college, and let's say you're 26 years old and you've never gone to college.
What if you go military your first 2 years?
That's what I'm saying. You're allowed. You know, you're allowed if you're 26. You can go back and play college ball if you've not played college before. But, I mean, how long can you be eligible to play a sport in college before it becomes like, okay, how about a job?
Should we make fun of people that stay in school for 10 years?
No, I'm not making fun of anybody.
Well, I'm just saying. I
agree with Jim on that. I can see an extra year. I can see five. But I don't see more than that, Andy. Like the kid in Miami, I know there's been a lot of stuff going on with injuries and everything else and blah, 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 blah. But the NCAA is sometimes selective about who they give the extra year of eligibility to and who they don't. And if you can throw some of that out.
Well, the only selective ones are injuries.
And those are selective. And sometimes they choose yes and sometimes they choose no.
I don't know. It seems like they're given a lot more now.
If they could clean that up and it becomes standard, maybe that's a better thing.
According to, I'm just reading Google AI, the majority of college students in the United States used to take between 4 and 5 years to earn 120 credit hours to graduate with their bachelor's degree. It has since become more common for undergraduates to take 6 years to finish.
Now you're comparing college students who are working a job to get their way through.
Who says these guys they're working a job?
To NIL guys who are making
working a job too. The NIL guys,
in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
We can disagree,
if not more, and we do.
Yes.
Mary Kay Cabot, PlainDealerCleveland.com. Coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.